Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember back in the fall of 2017, you had the little elf on the shelf, former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, announcing that the Trump administration was going to be moving to dismantle another Obama-era program, this time the DACA program. And of course, a bunch of lawsuits were filed. You had a bunch of federal court, circuit courts who issued injunctions. I think there were four of them. The idea is you stop this destruction and have Congress actually do something. I guess that was a bit too much to ask. Now what you've got is the Trump-stacked U.S. Supreme Court about to hear oral arguments on whether DACA stays or goes. And in the process, what you've got is, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of people whose lives hang in the balance. The oral arguments will be heard on Tuesday, November 11th, next Tuesday. I'm here to share some thoughts on not just the oral arguments and the Supreme Court thing, but where we should be going and how bad this could be. I've asked Tom Javits to come and talk with us. Tom is the Vice President of Immigration Policy there at the Center for American Progress. Tom, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So the Supreme Court's finally, I guess it's finally gotten that far that maybe we'll get some kind of response. And maybe we get this mess cleaned up to where people have some idea of where we're going forward or backwards, whichever way.
Yeah, I guess I'd say two things on that. One, I don't know that I'd say finally we're there, because actually the fact the Supreme Court took this case up is really premature. There's no reason for the courts to take this up. The lower courts, as you said, all the circuit courts that have considered this have agreed that the Wade administration ended this program was illegal. And so there's no difference of opinion right now in the circuit courts. Traditionally, this is the kind of situation in which the Supreme Court might have been hesitant to actually intervene and consider this case. The second thing is, there's no possible outcome here that would provide actual certainty or clarity or comfort to the hundreds of thousands of DACA recipients and about a quarter of a million U.S. citizen children in those households. Just because, you know, best case scenario, the Supreme Court basically sends this case back and says that the way the administration ended the program was likely unlawful. But of course, the administration could take a second crack at it if they're given a chance to.
So that's what the ultimate outcome of this you think is going to be, is more chaos and more trouble down the line.
I mean, potentially, right? So, I mean, one outcome could be that the Supreme Court looks at this and says, look, we're not going to weigh in on the wisdom of the program, but the way the administration ended this program appears to be unlawful. The explanations they provided don't appear to be genuine. That is what we saw the Supreme Court do with the Chief Justice leading the way in the census case, and it could be one way in which this case is resolved. But another option, to be honest, is the court could ultimately end up saying that the way the administration ended the program looked like it was lawful. And so the court could basically reverse the lower courts below and basically clear the way for hundreds of thousands of young undocumented immigrants who have had status now for over 7 years, who have been in the country since at least 2007, to become undocumented. And that would certainly cause a huge amount of chaos and disorder for themselves, for their families, for their communities, for their employers, for the institutions in which they are studying. These are individuals who are extremely well integrated throughout our society in every single state, in every single city, in every single community. And they're playing really important roles in lots of different ways.
Now, this is one of the issues that, you know, surprisingly, you know, there's bipartisan support for, you know, allowing these DACA recipients to remain. I mean, you know, I think anyone with a conscience or a heart or, you know, even a bit of, you know, of emotion would say, you know, they didn't come here on their own. You know, this is the only country they've ever known. We as a country have invested, you know, an awful lot in them. They should be able to stay and all that and find a pathway to citizenship. I think that the polling is pretty clear on that. So to undo it just seems kind of, well, mean.
Yeah, I mean, the polling is absolutely clear on this. I remember when I was working for the House Judiciary Committee back in 2009, 2010, we actually passed in the Democratic-controlled House at the time legislation that would have provided a path to citizenship for Dreamers at the time. This is before the DACA program was even created, in order to provide some of those individuals with an opportunity to get at least some measure of protection. The administration has had multiple opportunities over the last 3 years to find legislation that would provide a path to citizenship for these young people. The House did pass H.R. 6 earlier this year, which is legislation that would do exactly that. But they basically said no at every opportunity. And each time they've had a chance to close the deal, the president or Stephen Miller have come in to increase their demand and basically try and use the fate of these young people as a way of reshaping our immigration system going forward in a way that would allow for fewer immigrants to come and basically whiter, wealthier immigrants.
Now, you know, what do you say to the person? Because I just had this conversation yesterday where the Trump supporters are saying, look, you know, every president, you know, in our lifetime has brought up, you know, immigration, as, you know, said we need to, you know, be rounding people up and sending them out, and we need stronger borders. We need, you know, Clinton did it, Obama did it. You know, all of them, you know, have said that we need all of these things that Trump is now trying to do. And now the Democrats have been against it. Well, what do you say to those people who are looking at this going, you know, this is a Democratic problem as well?
I mean, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I agree. I'll say I don't disagree with the idea that this is a bipartisan problem. This country has for decades effectively accepted the fact that our immigration laws and our immigration system does not work. And it's not as a result of a lack of enforcement in the immigration system. Our laws themselves are largely unenforceable because they don't match the lived reality of what Americans want and need in our economy, in our society, in our families. And so basically we have a totally defective immigration system that we've essentially all basically agreed for the most part to just allow to continue to operate outside the law, except when it's politically convenient for someone to crack down in one way or another, make a big show of it. No one's done so as sort of viscerally kind of terrible a way as this current administration. But yeah, we absolutely need Congress to step in and build an immigration system that is more fair, more humane, more workable for the country.
Yeah, I mean, so ultimately, I mean, you know, this court hearing is just going to make a bad situation, you know, probably maybe a little worse, maybe a little bit better, but in no way fix the horrible situation that we're in for millions of people who are still stuck in the shadows.
Yeah, no, I mean, so that's absolutely right. I mean, you know, basically, there's no question we need a legal reform to our immigration system through Congress that would provide a lot of different things. That would certainly provide a pathway for individuals who are undocumented to get lawful status, but equally importantly, would provide an opportunity for people in the future to be able to come to the United States and to stay in the United States with lawful status and have, you know, all the full rights and responsibilities that come with that. So that is absolutely what the long-term plan and needs of the country are. But, you know, what the DACA initiative did is it basically looked at that broken reality and said, look, we've got 11 million people in the country right now who are undocumented, and we've got to make decisions about how we're going to best use resources and, you know, what kind of enforcement program would best align with our needs and our values. And going after individuals who came to the country as children, who have been here since at least 2007, who were living in the country at the time when this was announced in 2012, for at least 5 years. At this point, they've now been here all for at least 12 years. They're just the lowest priority. So if they can just come forward, apply, pay a fee, get vetted, we can give them some paper that basically says, you know, we're gonna for now basically treat you as a low priority person for removal. You can work. You can remain here lawfully. That was basically what this was. It was taking a bad situation and trying to make the best of it.
Right.
Understanding that it was a half measure at best for these young people, but essential. You know, even though it was a half measure, it was still essential for them, for their families, and for our communities.
No, I mean, because what I get from people when you talk about this, because I think there's so much disinformation out there. In fact, you know, just yesterday, the person was, because I was talking about this, and they were saying, well, you know, they shouldn't get instant citizenship like this, because there are a lot of people who believe that these programs, the TPS and DACA and these are instant citizens. They can stay forever, and, you know, there's no oversight. There's nothing. They just believe that it's, and I guess this is part of what the right wing has pushed, but, you know, there's this belief out there that, you know, this is almost like instant citizenship.
Yeah, and it's nothing like that. There's absolutely no path to citizenship that comes with DACA. There's no path to citizenship that comes with a grant of temporary protective status. And in fact, in both those circumstances, for the most part, even if you're a person who has one of those protections and you're married to a U.S. citizen who petitions for you, you still aren't able to avail yourself of the visa that would become available by virtue of that marriage. And so, you know, it really is a temporary protection that is just allowing individuals to continue to live their lives in the hopes that eventually, frankly, Congress will do its job and find a way of fixing the situation.
Now, I understand the Senate Foreign Relations Committee has just released a report on TPS, temporary protective status. What'd they find?
Yeah, that's a blockbuster report that Senator Menendez's staff came out with today. So you may remember that a couple of years ago, the administration triggered the termination of protections for about 400,000 people who have now been living in the country with this lawful status from El Salvador, from Honduras, for 2 decades, for Haitians for nearly a decade. These are folks who are extremely well integrated in our society. What the Senate Foreign Relations Committee staff found by going through all kinds of records that haven't previously been disclosed is that although the information provided to Secretary Tillerson, the Secretary of State at the time, was all basically counseling in favor of extending these protections or at least providing beneficiaries with a 3-year period in order to transition out of having this protection, there were politicals appointed by the Trump administration within the Secretary's office who said they couldn't possibly wind this program down 3 years because that would have meant all of these hundreds of thousands of lost their status would take place in the middle of the president's 2020 reelection campaign. And they didn't want the atmospherics of that to take place during the reelection campaign. And so what you have is you have career State Department officials, consular officials, ambassadors, the undersecretary of state, Western Hemisphere affairs, population, refugees, immigration, all these career personnel saying it will be devastating to national security, foreign policy, and the safety and security of hundreds of thousands of recipients and their American citizen children if you end this program precipitously. And the political said, who cares? It's not going to be good for the president's reelection campaign if you do this in 3 years. Speed it up and do it faster. And Tillerson said, full speed ahead.
Wow. And again, because nothing can get in the way of the reelection campaign. But, you know, I would think that this would be, you know, just red meat for the base. The closer you could get this to reelection time, the more the red meat would be thrown out to the base.
You know, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think for a lot of people, for some people that may be true. I mean, the really, really, really sort of hardcore small base. But for a lot of people, what we found over the last 3 years is that when they've, no matter what they may have supported during the election campaign, when they've finally seen what it looks like in person, when they see it up close, they don't like it, right? In 2018, again in 2019, just last week in Virginia, when you had Republican candidates who were running hard with these anti-gang messages and were just fear-mongering and demagoguing immigrants, voters rejected it. So I think people sort of see this, you know, they don't like what they're seeing. And I think these folks basically figured that out early on and were basically saying, hey, let's just get this thing out of the way soon so we don't have those optics affecting the president's reelection bid.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, this should be a campaign issue because ultimately, this is a legislative decision. There has to be some legislation that moves forward on this, or we're going to continue into this who knows land and end up in a situation where we'll continue what we've been doing for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly do hope that, you know, I think if there's a silver lining to come out of this administration, and it's often very hard to find one. But if there is one, I do think that the cruelty and chaos that they have created over the last 3 years, by in many cases exploiting the fact that the immigration system is really so defective, you know, may possibly create the opportunity to actually reject that dysfunction,
right,
and work toward a real solution. And so I'm hoping that we get a meaningful conversation about the policies that are necessary to build a functioning immigration system that can restore the rule of law and can be fair, humane, and truly workable.
So you kind of think maybe along the lines of Joe Biden that Republicans are going to have this great epiphany once Trump is gone and we're going to be able to work across the aisle to get all this stuff done. I don't prescribe to that level of thought, but I'm just asking if that's something you see as possible.
Yeah, no, I don't subscribe to the idea that there's going to be an epiphany. I spent 7 years in the House of Representatives, and I'm familiar with many of those folks quite well. I think that there needs to be a really overwhelming political change in this country, and I think that political change could open up the window for really meaningful reforms that preserve our democracy and advance all kinds of policies that are beneficial to the country.
See, that's a nice way of saying throw the bums out.
Yeah, it's a C3 conversation.
No, I mean, look, at the end of this, if the folks who are there aren't doing the job now, and this is, again, something that's been going on since the Reagan era. I mean, you know, I had to remind my Trump-supporting friend last night that, understand, the sainted Ronald Reagan did give amnesty to something like 8 million undocumented folks because they didn't know what to do with them. I mean, they weren't going to drive a big bus around and take people out of the country. They weren't going to build a giant wall because now we find out a $100 reciprocal saw will cut right through the wall. So what the hell was the point of that?
You know, so the amnesty in the Reagan administration was small as that. It wasn't 8 billion. But that's largely because we really never had a population, an undocumented population, as high as it's been in the last 10, 12 years or so. It's gone down in the last like 5 years or so, but it's much higher than it's been in the past. But there's a reason for that, too. During the Reagan administration in 1986, when they passed their amnesty, that was the last time that they updated a provision in the immigration law called registry, which essentially provides an opportunity for people who have been in the country previously but without lawful status to come forward, register with the government, pay a fee, pass checks, and get a green card. And we've updated that provision throughout the law for 100 years. At various different times, Democratic and Republican administrations have worked that legislation through, very simple legislation to just update that provision. It's basically sort of a way of saying, look, what we've got in place for the immigration system isn't working with 100% success. And so let's just basically provide a relief valve to say, for some folks, basically, if you've been here for a while and you can sort of pass these checks, you can pay a fee, okay, we'll regularize your status. We haven't done that since 1986. Yeah. And so, you know, as a result, we've really just been building up and building up and building up this population of people in the country who are undocumented, who, again, we count on being here. We rely on being here for so many different reasons, for our economy, for our workforce, for our families, and for, you know, for just for our communities.
Yeah, so last line of questioning I got for you, back to the Supreme Court. Is Roberts the guy we're watching?
I mean, I think there are a couple of different folks to look at, but I do think Roberts has, as much as this is difficult to believe at times, he has tried to represent himself as being someone who's looking out for his legacy. I think many folks are looking at that decision in the census case and saying they would have assumed that if he was really willing to just tank principle and just do stuff that was in the long-term political interest of the Republican Party, frankly, that he would have just allowed the citizenship question to go onto the census and moved on, hoping that would suppress turnout on the census. And he didn't. He said, look, I've looked at the records, and I think there is good evidence here that the reasons that the administration provided were actually pretextual, and they weren't the real reasons behind this. And there's a very strong argument to be made when you look at the DACA decision, but that's exactly what happened here. And again, as I mentioned on TPS, but that's exactly what happened with TPS. Over and over and over again, you're seeing the administration making substantive decisions that need to be guided upon, the facts based upon the law, and in fact, they're being driven by ideology and politics.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And when we get a decision or once we get some more information on this, I'd love to have you back and share some more thoughts on this.
I'd love to. And we don't know when that's going to be. I mean, it could be in February as early as that. Traditionally,
right.
The big decisions like this come on the very last days of the term in June. But, if the court is really planning, if it looks like after the argument when they, start trading around decisions, it looks like this thing is going to come down with DACA, facing trouble. I think there's a question as to whether or not the court, if they're going to make a political decision like that, are they going to want that political decision to really land in June, right when the presidential election campaign is heating up? And you've got hundreds of thousands of these young people, basically, who the public so strongly supports having these protections ripped away from them.
Again, it'll be interesting to see what happens in February. And that might even be the telling sign, that depending on when they let it go. But, Tom, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Thanks so much for giving us an update.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Good stuff. Tom Javits, Vice President of Immigration Policy there at the Center for American Progress. You can check out their work at AmericanProgress.org. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.